The Lusitania was a luxurious British ocean liner built to be the Greyhound of the seas, which I guess at the time was a good thing. But on a trip from New York to Liverpool, the Lusitania was torpedoed by a German U-boat and sank in just 18 minutes. It killed more than 1,000 people. The incident is often cited in American history books as the primary reason the United States entered World War I. But my guest today says there is much more to the story. Eric Larson is a nationally acclaimed author of narrative fiction. He's best known for Devil in the White City, a book about the 1893 World's Fair. His recent book, Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lusitania, tells the lesser-known sides of the Lusitania story, including the stories about many of the lives that were lost. Eric is in North Carolina for readings this week, and he joins me from partner station WCQS in Asheville. Hello, Eric.
Hi.
We described you as an author of narrative fiction, which is something different from historical fiction. Tell us how
Can I correct that also right away?
Yeah.
There's nothing fictional about my books. It's narrative.
No, I'm sorry, narrative nonfiction.
You
know,
yes.
That's what it says right in front of me. And for some reason, I decided to make up my own script.
That's all right.
I fictionalized actually what I had in front of me because it simply wasn't good enough.
That's why
you do it, and that's why you don't do it, because what you had was good enough. But do tell us about your approach.
Yeah, well, my feeling is that, first of all, I look long and hard to find an idea that is going to be compelling enough that can be told as a true nonfiction story. But I'll tell you, the Lusitania sure fit the bill, at least for me.
Well, tell me more about that. The Lusitania, we know it as that ship that was the British ship sunk by a German U-boat. And because of that that atrocity with all of those civilians on board, the U.S. was compelled to enter World War I. But tell us a little more about that ship, who was on it, and also about the competition. That was a big luxury liner and one of the best in the fleet, right?
Right, absolutely. But first let's address this whole idea of the U.S. getting into the war because of the Lusitania. That was one of the things that really drew me to the subject from the beginning. And it is because, you know, this is what we're taught in high school. It's like the equivalent, it's supposed to be the World War I equivalent of Pearl Harbor. But it really was not the case. I mean, we did not get into World War I for 2 full years after the Lusitania was sunk. And even then, when Wilson went to Congress to ask for a declaration of war, he never once mentioned the Lusitania. Too many other things had happened. So, and that was one of the first things that I was fascinated by.
Yeah, I find in just looking at what you had done for this book, I didn't remember that it was fully 2 years after the sinking of Lusitania that we actually got on the road. But tell us more about the ship, because it was very competitive. That North Atlantic trade, that corridor, very competitive, both in freight and also in passenger traffic.
Yeah, it was very competitive, at least up until the outbreak of World War I. When the war began, a lot of the competition went away because on the British side, ships were commandeered for use as troop ships. A lot of German liners were interned in neutral ports, essentially for the duration of the war. So the Lusitania was, at that point, the biggest, fastest, most luxurious ocean liner in service. And it was quite a ship. I mean, it really was a gigantic vessel and very, very fast, or should have been, and that's part of the story.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the captain of the Lusitania as well, Thomas Turner, right?
Yeah, Captain Turner, William Thomas Turner. He was, he's the kind of guy who, if you were aboard Lusitania and you saw him walking around the bridge, you would think, okay, I'm in good hands. And he was an absolutely veteran commander within the Cunard line. The kind of guy, like, you know, the equivalent would be when you're on an airplane, you know, when you hear that voice of the pilot come through the speaker. You know, there's a certain kind of voice you want. You don't want Woody Allen. You know, you want a certain kind of voice.
Chuck Yeager.
Yeah. You want Chuck Yeager, right? So that's the kind of guy you have with Captain Turner. Very, very, very competent captain. Although I think he did have one fatal flaw, which was I don't think he quite bought the idea that things had degraded to the point where somebody would actually try to torpedo the Lusitania or also the idea that any submarine could actually catch him to do it.
Yeah, well, tell us more. We'll talk about the speed, I guess. That's one thing. But also the fact that the British did know there was a U-boat in the area, and there were communications with the military, but they sort of broke down between the military and and this particular passenger ship. They didn't communicate well with each other, right?
They didn't communicate at all. No, what happened was there was this top-secret British entity within the Admiralty which had – unbeknownst to the Germans, of course, had begun intercepting and decoding and deciphering virtually every wireless communication between German naval vessels. And one of these messages was a message from the submarine that eventually sank the Lusitania. This submarine was U-20, commanded by Captain Walther Schwieger. And what's interesting is that a number of messages were intercepted between this U-boat and German naval headquarters. And one of them was a very detailed message that indicated exactly, that stated exactly where Captain Schwieger and U-20 were going to go for their patrol. They were going to be stationed off the mouth of the Mersey River at Liverpool, which is the entry point for all the major liners and so forth of that era. And yet nothing was communicated to Captain Turner. Even more interesting, actually, to me, is that Room 40 actually tracked the travels of this submarine for a full 24 hours in detail, knowing exactly the positions that the ship was that the submarine was reporting to headquarters. And again, nothing was communicated to the captain.
Now, tell us more about this speed issue and the fact that there was a differential in the perception of how fast this thing could go or how fast it was going.
Yeah, this turns out to be actually a fairly crucial thing. As is often one step on the road to hell as an economy measure, Cunard had shut down one of the four boiler rooms on the ship. It had four boiler rooms, which if all were operating at capacity, generated a top speed of 25 to 26 knots, which was a tremendous amount of speed for a vessel that large at the time, equivalent to about 30 miles an hour. But because of this economy move, shutting down one of the boilers gave it a top speed of about 21 knots. Now, that doesn't sound like all that big a differential, but essentially it added one full day to the voyage, and that day made all the difference. And many other factors contributed to the end of the Lusitania, but that particular factor was huge.
How important a military target was this? Was this a military target in principle, or did the Germans think they had to get this one?
You know, I think more than anything, I don't think the Germans saw this as a military target at all, and I don't think Captain Schwieger saw it at all as a military target. Captain Schwieger was, like any U-boat commander, was intent on becoming an ace, accumulating as many tons of sunk shipping as he possibly could. I don't think he thought very hard about the ship. In fact, there's a certain amount of speculation that suggests that he also didn't necessarily expect that he would actually sink it, at least not in 18 minutes, because he only fired one torpedo, and that one torpedo was sufficient to bring the whole ship down, which really startled him as well. So anyway, that's pretty much how things stood at that point.
Well, as we've established, you are meticulous in your research in your nonfiction, and you got a lot of this research from information from survivors. Tell us a little bit about what you gathered from survivors.
Yeah, anybody who's in the again, this is narrative nonfiction, and if you're going to do it, you have to have the information. You can't fake it to make it, you know. So anybody who's in the book is in it for the very specific reason: A, that they survived, and B, in so doing, left a really nice detailed account of what happened to them and to others aboard the ship, to help me develop the sort of TikTok, if you will, of the voyage and of those final moments. That was absolutely crucial. You know, like Theodate Pope was America's first, one of America's first female, licensed female architects, and she left a really nice detailed letter that she had written to her mother, and that was wonderful.
One of many pieces of evidence that Eric Larson used to put together his book, Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lusitania. Eric, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Eric has events throughout North Carolina this week, going to be at UNC Asheville's Humanities Lecture Hall tonight at 7, Country Bookshop in Southern Pines tomorrow, Quail Ridge on Friday, McIntyre's in Pittsburgh Saturday. So check out our website, stateofthings.org, to find out more information about where you can see Eric and more about the book. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.